In my case, what I found really helpful is journaling with the power of listening plus regular reflections, which is a topic that I'm writing about right now. It's about, again, going back to the intentionality to have the space to think about the individual, to really think about the problems that were being discussed and maybe the member is struggling with. Often, most of the times, the best solutions don't come in that one-to-one listening, really trying to connect. I might not get a lot of ideas there and then, but then what happened is when I'm digesting through the information, sometimes even subconsciously, then I start to get the ideas.
Hello, everyone. It's Raquel Ark. It's time to work smarter and feel better together. Welcome back to Your Listening Superpower podcast, where we explore listening as a superpower that transforms communication into connection, both at work and at home. Listen in on inspiring conversations with authors, scientists, and leaders that will open your mind about what is possible and give you communication tools for your leadership toolbox that you can use right away. Let's have fun discovering and growing our listening superpower together. Imagine bringing your whole self to work as your strategy to lead multiple teams in a remote environment and to do this successfully. Yet this might also mean that before you dive into all that work that needs to get done, taking the pulse of the collective energy of your team is what needs to be done to make sure everybody's aligned and to foster a more empathetic and productive environment. My guest today on the Listening Superpower podcast is Clint Calleja. He's the director of engineering at Hotjar, which is a successful startup that operates on a fully remote basis. In this episode, Clint talks about his leadership journey and his mindset change from providing solutions to providing tools for others to learn and grow. Clint leads multiple engineering teams and has more than 16 years of experience. He shares his journey, which has led him to use a people-first approach, even surprising him about the incredible impact in this data-driven, outcome-oriented environment. Clint shares an unexpected approach he uses to help him listen to himself and to his teams. And it's something that helps to create an overall deep sense of belonging, which allows him to also grow in his leadership journey. Enjoy listening in. Welcome to the Listening Superpower podcast, Clint. I'm really excited to have you on the podcast and to dive into some of the areas that you have learned leading teams.
Really, really excited to be here as well. Really, thanks for the invite.
So to start off our interview, I'd like to know, when did you first start to notice the power of listening, whether it worked or it didn't work?
The best time I've seen it working, and it was the first time where I noticed how powerful it could be, was well, when I actually had firsthand experience of someone leading me through compassion, like, and seeing me for actually a human being part of a team of people rather than just an employee. It was the moment where I felt I belonged to the team, like, and I wanted to do more to help both my lead and the team. So yeah, in exchange, it felt like I wanted to do the same for others.
When you look back at that moment, it seemed like it really stuck out for you. And was it because there was a stark contrast to other experiences, or was it more like, oh, there's this deeper feeling I hadn't felt before?
It is partly based to previous compared to previous experiences, but also to my own expectations. Like, if I can explain, you know, like, I was a bit younger, starting in software engineering, wanting to, you know, grow. So it was most of the time back then always about work, getting projects done. But this was the moment where I kind of connected to the fact that being able to bring my whole self to work brought out something very different in the culture that I was working in, and the dynamics of the team, myself as well.
So tell me more about bringing your whole self to work.
The biggest realization was that before I had this experience, I always used to read or even believe that, you know, you could leave your home problems at home, you don't bring them to work. But the biggest shift was actually the acceptance of exactly the opposite, that we're just one vessel and it's not really that possible to say, hey, I'm not going to think about what's happening in my personal life because now I'm working. And it's vice versa as well, right? It's maybe there are people who can do it, but I also, you know, talk with a lot of people that are not able to just switch off from their computers and that's it. The day stops there. And especially with remote, you need to be a bit like even more disciplined because you don't have the commuting away from the office where you're like winding down your thoughts from work. And instead, you know, you just switched off your laptop, you're already in your house. So it's very easy to just keep on thinking about the work that you were doing.
Yeah, it's there's so much truth to that. And and what you're saying, even now, it's not only people used to only work in the office, but now so many of us are working remote at home. And then what does that mean, you know, in terms of bringing our whole selves to work, or how, when do we turn off? When do we turn on? And now even as you're leading teams, how is it that you work with teams where you're working remote, people are working at home, supporting them to be able to bring them whole, their whole selves, and at the same time, being able to respect their space at home too? I don't know if that's the right question.
There's no silver bullet on how to navigate, because there are two parts to this. It's, on one part, we're looking at how can we help people balance their life and get used to remote work? And then additionally, how do we make sure that when we're supporting people, we're looking at, you know, the whole package and not just the work items? So I think, to me, the best investment that I've done and I keep doing is how do we structure the one-on-ones. I like a weekly cadence. There is no boundaries between work topics or personal topics. It's, you know, an open floor for the member that is joining the one-on-one to actually talk about the top things on their mind, be it whatsoever. And this is the space where I listen and I try to navigate between how much solutions do I try to provide versus how much coaching and questioning and just nudging in a direction. So, like, I was surprised when I first started the one-on-ones the way they were and they are done at Hotjar, because this was the first-hand experience I had from my previous lead where I started these one-on-ones. I've never had such a thing before. And this was where I started to realize that there's power through connecting with people.
Oh, yes. I love that. Let's let that sink in just a moment, also for our listeners. Say that again.
There's a different dynamic, like when you unlock a connection with the people you're working with. I've had firsthand experience with managers, with good managers that led me. Even I was leading a team where the focus, as I said, was more about the execution, the goals, learning, retrospectives. There was less investment on the connection with the people. Like, how comfortable do people feel to come walk in an office for a one-on-one or jump on a call for a one-on-one and talk about what's causing their day to be yellow instead of green, yeah. Which is an exercise we started doing like in the last year between some of people I work with.
So what makes my day yellow versus green? What is the exercise? Now I'm really curious. This is my playful side coming out. Tell me about this. I haven't heard that one before.
So it's, you know, I mentioned the one-on-ones, and usually we lead to the one-on-ones with a weekly check-in, which are weekly submission, which already gives you this well-being pulse. How well did you feel the last week at work from 1 to 5? That's already pretty good within itself. It gives you an indication of, you know, it's one of the most important metrics to me to look at. But then additional to that, I also started to realize and sometimes feel myself as well that, as you know, in leadership, it's very easy to feel alone and feel that you need to have the answers. You need to be to carry the weight of the world, maybe on your own. After I experienced this myself and I saw a couple of the people I worked for also going through this challenge, we came up with an idea to do the daily pulse, we said. So the whole idea was about, before we decide what are we trying to achieve today, before we understand how much time do we have in the day, let's start with a simple pulse, green, yellow, or red. And the reason is, again, going back to that one vessel, we're just the same person, work and outside. The reason I was suggesting this was that, you know, we need to start with setting ourselves expectations. We need to respect ourselves. So if I have 3 hours of focus time available today, but I feel green in the traffic light system, and maybe I can expect myself to achieve 3 or 4 things. But if I'm on a red, I shouldn't be expecting the same out of myself. And that is where it starts. Doing that exercise and sharing it with my colleagues was where, you know, things start to change and reach a different level of comfortability, of safety.
So what I hear you saying is you're helping to close the gap with what we would like to do and what actually is possible. And it's more of a realistic check-in, a reality check of what might be, you know, because often we have all these plans and in the end we don't do it and then we feel bad and, you know, whatever. So it's all closing that gap, that intending and doing gap, it sounds like. And I could imagine just by sharing that in the group, in the team, that I feel red today, that actually that might shift the red to a pink or shift that red to a closer to a yellow just by sharing it and being able to be human.
Indeed, indeed. Within itself, like, it was already such a small exercise. It takes me maybe, what, 5 minutes to do? But the fact that I could share that with someone and someone who's listening, you see, you know, we've had cases where, you know, people were on a red day, you know, and you see the support, you see the kind of messages that come through. But it's also, as I said, it's also to support yourself, to start with your self-expectations. I mean, so many people that I work with all try to grow, are trying to reach new heights. That's cool, like, that's good. But we also need to choose the days where we want to stretch. When I personally was not doing this self-exercise, even on my own, I started to see more days where I felt frustrated. And the reason that was because, okay, I wanted to achieve 3 things, but I only managed 1. It was only after I started visualizing and logging some information for myself about where did I spend my time, how did I feel today? It was only then that I started to realize that actually I asked myself, am I giving myself the right space to achieve what I'm setting out to do? So it wasn't anyone expecting more of me. It was just me expecting more out of myself.
Oh, that's really nice. Just so what you're talking about is really helping to increase self-awareness, not only as yourself. And so even as a team lead, if you become aware of yourself, you're more likely to help others become aware of themselves or have a realistic perspective of what's really possible to be able to estimate that. So that self-awareness seemed really important. And now that you're doing that in the team, there's a self-awareness piece, but then there's this choice. Okay, now that I know how I'm doing or what's going on, then what do I choose from here? And that's transparent within the team, it seems like.
It is. I mean, now we're restarting because we went through a restructuring, so I'm rebuilding this habit.
Yeah, it seems a little scary. Like, I was like, that could be really vulnerable, right?
That's it. That's actually the key part. Another kind of learning along the way that I keep reminding myself from time to time is that it's okay to be vulnerable, especially with people you're working for. It's, again, if I don't want to be the person to set myself expectations, to have all the answers for all the problems thrown at me, the best way I can do that is to be transparent. And, you know, when I'm vulnerable, it's okay to show that as well.
And so if you look at kind of what's happening now compared to, you know, when you first started playing around with this, you know? What is it that you know now that you didn't realize before?
I think one of the biggest surprises in hindsight was that I feel I need to know much less than I expected myself I have to in order to help people grow.
This is, you know, I hear so often from in like the communication workshops and coaching, I hear how so often like people really, you know, I feel like I need to answer questions right away, or they're going to think I, you know, they're going to look down on me, or they're going to think I'm dumb. If, you know, there's this feeling that even asking a question or responding really quick will make others perceive whether they're smart or not, you know, which is not the case. What you're talking about is even beyond that. So you don't have to know as much as what you thought you did. Can you give me an example of what that means?
It's very interesting what you mentioned, because that is exactly where it started for me. Like, you know, that feeling of how am I being perceived? And then when I dug in more, I realized that it was partially because of the place I was trying to build confidence from. So traditionally as an IC, I built confidence through doing this same thing over and over. So when a new task is thrown at me, I've done it, you know, writing an API, querying the database, I've done it. Maybe with the technology changes a bit, but it's mostly the same. When I switched to leadership and I tried to use that approach, it took me a quarter to realize this is not going to work.
Because it didn't work. All that I've done before, just throw it out the window. Why isn't it working?
Because even if you did the same task with a different person, that's it. That's the whole change. It's a different person. There is no copy-paste. What worked for one person will not work exactly the same for another. So you need to continuously fine-tune. So,
yeah, and even that person in a different day might be different.
Exactly. Going back to the traffic light system, it even gives you an indication of, you know, how do you approach a person. If you don't have any of this visibility and, you know, your expectations that person X is, you know, doing well, so let's have the, you know, that discussion about the hard decision we wanted to do today, most probably not going to be the right day to do it, you know, because again, going back to how we feel at the beginning of the day also includes the filters that gets applied to your decision-making process. But I think, to be fair, it's not that I chose, you know, to learn how to detach this much. The reality was that when 2.5 years ago, I switched from leading 2 teams to leading 7 and then 10, honestly, I tried to know a lot, but this was where I realized it's not going to work. There's no way how you can know in detail every problem that we're talking about. I think that is where the best way I could see was to switch more to a coaching approach, where I don't build confidence because I know the answer to the problem that I don't know yet. But instead, I felt more comfortable knowing that I'm going to make myself available. I'll be available, I'll be able to listen, I'll be able to work with the individual. And what I'm sure of is that we'll try something out. Now, it's not going to work necessarily the first time or the second, but we'll get there. You know, one step at a time, we'll get there. And that's much less pressure even on myself than to expect to have all the answers.
Yeah.
And it's a win from the listening aspect, where people do feel supported.
You know, so, you know, you talk about your journey, you know, as being, you know, kind of just, you know, an individual contributor where you're just taking care of a task, whatever, then to leading a team. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're leading leaders of teams. So it's a whole, also a different level and what's possible and what's capable and how that affected and changed you. And just for our listeners, so that our listeners know, you work remote. You do not go into the office. The teams that you are leading are everywhere, basically. And so there's also a lot of work that's done offline in leading the teams. So I think this is really interesting, because often we think of communication or listening as just like what you and I are doing right now in this conversation, in this interview, where we're having this conversation. But actually, you've had to develop listening skills that go beyond the one-on-one in-person conversation. I'd love to understand more about that, because I think that's an area that has not been thought of very much at all. And I'm sure you're also discovering, what are some things that you have noticed support listening even when you're not in person all the time?
I think it extends beyond, in a fully remote and asynchronous first setup, it extends beyond listening and works, you know, covers the need to be able to observe. It is a fact that communication in a remote setup needs to be much more intentional. The space for it, even the space to socialize, need to be more intentional. It's not like when I worked at the office, you know, it's Friday, maybe we stopped a bit early, we finished the sprint, go grab a beer or two from the bar. You have the social element. In a fully remote setup, you don't have that. So they need to think about meetups to socialize, the one-on-ones. Then extending beyond that, it's, in my case, what I found really helpful is journaling with the power of listening, plus regular reflections, which is a topic that I'm writing about right now. This is where at the end of the day, the end of the week, maybe when I'm doing peer feedback, having the ability to look back at my journal and reflect on either the individual, the situation, myself, when I'm doing my own review, patterns, the metrics that I'm looking at. So it's about, again, going back to the intentionality to have the space to think about the individual, to really think about the problems that were being discussed and maybe the member is struggling with. I find myself that often, most of the times, the best solutions don't come in that one-to-one, because see, I have this challenge that if listening, really trying to connect, I might not get a lot of ideas there and then. But then what happens is when I'm digesting through the information, sometimes even subconsciously, then I start to get the ideas. And in order to not disrupt work and life, I just take notes on sticky notes.
Okay.
So that I can follow up the next day with the individual and say, hey, you know, like yesterday we were talking about this, or the day before, I just had this idea. See what you think about it. So It's, as I said, it's beyond just listening, but having the space to reflect and, you know, journal your thoughts.
I love that idea. Do you journal every day or during the week, or how what's your schedule for journaling and reflecting?
All the time.
Whenever you have a moment.
Yes, and this is I think the change for me was journaling was a suggestion by a previous lead, and I had my doubts at first, but the powerful part about it was how ask myself, how do I change it into a habit, into an atomic habit? So I knew that to do that, it needed to be quick. Otherwise, if I have to create a Jira project or like every time, it's not going to work. So it needed to be like something that I can do in seconds. It needed to transform into, before actioning on something, I need to write it there. So I use this tool called Obsidian. In my case, there are many others. And that's the exercise. At the beginning of the day, cool, let's do this quick pulse. What are my daily goals? And then as I go along, whatever I notice or even new requests that come in need to go into this journal. My weekly notes are divided into two parts. There's the task list, and the bottom part is the observations. And this is how I split. It's a very simple split. There's no rocket science. That was the only way I could collect as much information from my brain. In fact, actually, these tools are called the second brain. So, you know, that's the rule. Everything a little bit before it gets executed, or when I'm thinking it needs to go there, and it needs to be quick.
So you have this program that you use that separates the tasks, the observations. And so as you're going throughout the day, you're either working within that task space, or also if something happens, someone says something, or you have a sense of something, then you write it in the observations area just to track in that moment. So then you get it out and you get back to your work, and then you can go back and reflect on that. Or at some point in time, it might help process things.
Indeed. Yeah. And especially about the observations, one coach once actually explained it really simple. The reason why it has been working so well, like it's paying off, is that, like, as this coach said it, it's like our brains are really bad at storing. Mm-hmm. So we should use them for the creative aspect and less for storing. So knowing that my thoughts are there on this journal and I have the quick ability to link back, So let's say, you know, I want to provide opportunities for person B to grow. And I'm looking at this reflection monthly, quarterly, or on a 6 month basis, it depends, right? I see that I can track much more opportunities this way than if I try to remember myself, because what usually happens there is there's an element of recency bias.
Yeah, so, definitely. The recent, yeah, definitely. That we remember the last things. That's why they say when you're getting promoted, do some of that stuff that's visible right before the promotion.
Yes.
Instead of having to remind people from what happened a long time ago. Hey, so I'm just trying to imagine this in my mind. So at the first I had like two sections, but actually now that you're talking, I'm thinking, oh, is it your observations? Are they organized a little bit? Do you just write them down or do you organize them a little bit according to the person, according to the project?
And, but again, it goes back to...
It has to be quick. This is why I'm asking. And exactly. Not much time taken in organizing.
So did you see my notes? Actually, what I said to myself, if this is the second brain replicating my brain, it cannot look fancy. Like, because in our brains, there's a lot of thoughts going through.
Yeah.
So in my case, it's a simple checklist for tasks, a checklist for observations.
Oh,
that's
nice.
It. What I do is this tool, and like I'm sure even others out there, enable you to tag. So if I am writing something about, let's say, myself, Clint, right? You can create an anchor, a tag for Clint. So then if I go 3 months from today and I search by that anchor, I will get all the notes that were written.
Okay.
So I don't need to kind of, you know, make it.
Yeah, that's nice. That's really nice. I was just thinking down the road that you can use that and put it into one of these AI programs to write books and you have your whole biography taken care of.
Interesting. Interesting. Anyway,
this is my brain, Clint's brain. No, I'm kidding. Oh, no, that's really good. What I think is really wonderful about this idea, and I think, you know, I will try this because that would really help me. I'm also a thinker and I have many things going on. And so I write a lot on different places all over the place, but to organize it in that way would be really nice. But basically it's helping to clear our minds, so we're able to be more present in the moment. And it does help probably with some of this certain biases because we do forget or our memory changes over time so that we can kind of check back in. And it probably also helps, like what you said, if you have a thought on someone said something, then you can check in about that topic with that person. So that person feels heard and listened to, and that belonging feeling is built.
That's actually a very good point. It's beyond the listening as well, especially in these setups, the follow-ups are what really connect the whole cycle.
The follow-ups. Well, you know, that's one thing I've noticed in listening communication. You know, to me, listening is a part of communication. Also in leadership with organizations. And I'm guilty of this too, because, you know, we run out of time, where you do listen, you make decisions, you take action, and we forget to communicate that back. And then people perceive that nothing had happened, but it did, something did happen and they were listened to. So they don't feel listened to, even though they probably were listened to, because we never communicated back. We didn't complete the cycle. And I sometimes think, well, if we would just slow the pace down just a little bit, to complete that cycle, that would have a huge impact on, you know, just our relationships, not feeling, you know, people feeling understood, belonging. That would probably help take care of a lot of the symptoms of what's going on in the world.
I agree. I think a big part of why sometimes this doesn't happen is prioritization. You know, if I look at my week and I just go all in saying, okay, I see roughly about 10 hours where I can focus, and I just fill them all with goals. How much space am I providing myself to be able to follow up on, you know, the listening aspect, the connecting to the people aspect?
Connecting to the people.
As I said, like it has to be very intentional. It's not something that will happen on the side by its own.
No. And I think that's the assumption often that with the listening, that it's just going to happen. One of the things I've heard lately that's really missing, and I hear this not only from leaders, but also, you know, when it comes to research and stuff, that what's missing is a lot of this reflective and critical thinking right now. That's so what you're doing right now helps to kind of hold the space for that. I'd like to look into the We talked a little bit before, you know, offline about feedback and the importance of feedback in building team bonds, because often feedback can be a stressful experience. People worry about feedback, but you also have some people who really love feedback. So to transition from feedback being a really stressful negative experience to one that creates team bonds and builds culture, I would love to hear your perspectives on that.
It is a mindset change. So when I first started working with Hodger, that was, I think, one of the biggest culture shifts I experienced. It was like feedback was really part of the day-to-day, you know, both with the one-on-ones, with your check-ins, where you have a space on a weekly basis to give feedback to your team lead.
So the feedback goes both ways.
Indeed, indeed. A part of the weekly submission. So what then makes it different? I'll be honest, at first, you know, when I get to my first, for example, peer feedback cycle, I still had that anxiety. I thought, okay, this is going to be a list of bullet points that I'm doing wrong. That's the whole key. It's the doing wrong. Whereas instead, what I've learned here is that feedback, as another friend of mine likes to say, feedback is actually a gift. There are two ways to grow, or at least two of the ways to grow are either you're doing a lot of trial and error, right? Or you bypass the trial and error because of kind feedback, genuine feedback that is really coming to you to help you grow. Again, it does require intentionality, and it's not about sugarcoating. Actually, I don't really think, and for me, sugarcoating or the sandwich of how to pass feedback doesn't really work. But the way that works well for me is that I apply the feedback on strengths that I observe. It becomes more of an opportunity rather than a thing you're doing wrong.
So the opportunity is more possible when feedback is done intentionally. So if you were to share an experience about feedback that was not sugar-coated, yet intentional and kind, could you give me an example of what that might look like or feel like?
Okay, yes, let's keep it high level, right? But hopefully you get the gist. So let's imagine you're in a place where you can see that someone's day-to-day work has been impacted. There's something that is causing a negative impact, and you can see this. You like to go and fix the situation, but again, we're working with people. So it's not about fixing, it's about understanding. It's about, first and foremost, helping the other end see and validate if what I'm seeing is actually the case or not. And that's where it starts. It starts with me sharing what I'm perceiving and asking if this is actually something that the individual is perceiving as well. In some cases, you align, in some cases, you don't. And actually, you still get to learn because you were either missing something or some of the work maybe wasn't that visible. Could even highlight the opportunity where maybe you weren't connecting enough with that person, right? Mm. So there's always a win-win just by starting the discussion in this way. If then it flows where we are aligned, and even the individual can see it, then the next part is to explain the impact I'm seeing for the team, the impact I'm seeing on my end, and, you know, open up the space for that member to not be micromanaged into a solution, but to actually be part of the solution. Because I just put everything on the table and I'm explaining, hey, okay, now that we agreed, here's the impact I'm seeing. What do you think we can do to start, you know, changing course?
And it's And I love this thing. What can we do to start changing course? So it's not what can we do to get this end result? Maybe that's this, but what's the next step? What's the next step? This is a journey. We're on this together. I think this mindset also really helps in the feedback process.
Yes, indeed. It's less about just pointing the problem out and then it's going to get solved, but it is indeed like a journey where you're walking with the people. So, you know, and I was also lucky enough to have the support from my leads as well, where they walked with me in cases where I, you know, was struggling a bit.
Yeah, nice. So if you were to give some advice to new people leaders, what would be some advice that you would give to them?
I think if I look back a couple of years ago, I think the first thing that I would point out is to, especially me coming from an engineering background, I really had to try hard to resist the urge to fix it. And I think this was partly where the expectation of having an answer for everything was coming from as well. What I realized was that, okay, especially maybe if you're leading one team and you know the people really well, you might be able to have a lot of answers and a lot of ideas. But what I've realized is that if I'm the one who's coming up with the suggestions and with the answers, I'm not enabling others to grow, to be able to trust their judgment more and actually lead to an empowered place where people are comfortable trying, taking decisions, especially two-way door decisions, and then learning from them.
You know, something I've thought a lot about, I don't know if, see what you think about this, you know, how do we, because often people are worried about promoted or they want to be promoted quickly. And I know in the tech world, I feel like people get promoted a lot faster than some other industries, you know, or there's an expectation to be promoted quicker because of some of the organizations that grow very fast, which doesn't necessarily happen once organizations are larger. And how can we be able to move up in our career, in our profession, or do, you know, move up, and at the same time be able to lift others up as well? Because often, you know, sometimes people are so into their own thing that they end up really causing problems or hurting other people in that process of stepping up. So I wonder if you have some thoughts on how we can lift ourselves up while we're lifting others, because I feel that's what you're describing.
Yes, organically, it's true. That's why I said, like, I think it's a really interesting one. I because to me, the priority is, I believe that the work I'm doing will be visible through actually the people I work for. It's through their successes, through their achievements. So it's kind of a cycle where you're helping others grow, and then their achievements are reflected also on you as the department lead, for example. But it's not just that. Like, I really like to personally focus more on growth rather than promotions, because that's the biggest takeaway for me. You know, a promotion in one place might be called title X, and another place might be called title Y, but the growth, the learnings that I've built along the way, those are the things that I'm going to take with me anywhere.
Yeah.
So, and along the way, helping others grow, and just providing the safe space where you're listening and really acting and connecting with the people. It's very interesting to see, once people start to feel more comfortable and safe, how quickly their growth trajectory changes. Like the trend, sometimes it's not the first time I found myself surprised at, you know, how quickly someone grew in a certain area, for example. And then you get to learn back from them.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I know that then it switches and all of a sudden, like, wait, tell me about this. just so that our listeners, I just want to come back to this again. So, I mean, you work for Hotjar, and it's a fully distributed remote company. A lot of the communication is not like we are speaking right now, but a lot of the communication is actually written communication. So maybe you can just describe how, I'm just trying to think of how to connect listening also to this, because I really think that the listening is not only the verbal, but also nowadays we have to think of listening in terms of reading the text we get, what we read on Slack or whatever, that there is a listening component there that often we don't realize, that to make that, bring that more to awareness. I'd love to circle back to the fact that you work for a fully distributed and remote company, which means that you're working also across time zones, and a lot of communication is written, not only on video or audio or whatever, not only by voice, but it's written, and communication happens a lot. Even a lot of the things that you've described today, you're also probably have written communication in mind, also with feedback and some of this. And I just want to bring that to our listeners' awareness, because not everybody works in that type of company or in that type of situation, even though it's happening more and more. And so one of the things I've realized for myself lately is, you know, how do we think about, or I've asked myself, how do we think about listening, not only in terms of our conversation, like what we're having now in this, which is where a lot of the research has been done you know, between people in this moment, but also to think of listening as when we read our this piece of feedback, that I'm actually listening to someone's voice, even though it's in written form. I was wondering if how you see listening written versus verbal, or what do you see the differences there, and what could be some thoughts that would help our listeners be able to listen better even when they're reading something?
The first big difference that comes to mind is that, especially with reading, you have much less visibility on the emotion. And it's very easy to misinterpret a message coming across as maybe angry, where it's not the case. So I think as a writer, you know, sending those messages, sending that feedback, goes back to the intentionality of, you know, again, not allowing ourselves space to process the information that's coming through, can many times lead to trying to rush through quickly through messages, answering people quickly. But if there's no connection yet, the other person doesn't know you that well, the chances of misinterpreting the tonality of the message are much, much higher than someone who, and even with someone who knows you, you know, again, tying it back, depending on how we feel during the day, the same message on different days, even from someone who knows you, can be interpreted very differently. So I think that's one of the main things to keep in mind, if you ask me. And also the other part is how much information you try to process, because the more the company grows, the more asynchronous practices come in place. It's very easy to get overwhelmed trying to keep up with everything. It's a topic that came up as Hunter was growing.
And what? And now what?
There's this idea of JOMO, the joy of missing out. So I acknowledge that I cannot know what 500 people are doing. Goes back to priorities. What are my direct areas of responsibility? What are the things I really cannot drop? What are the second priorities, which maybe start to become optional? And what are the things I really should not try to follow up on, because they're eating from something else, from something else's time? And this doesn't necessarily mean fire and forget, like don't care about anything else, but especially about the things that are interesting to follow, but maybe are second priority for me. It could be potential opportunities to be delegated to other people who are closer and are looking for opportunities to bring a bigger impact or be part of something else. So again, the whole cycle of trying to identify opportunities where I can't stretch beyond accepting that, you know, the company is growing, you can't keep up with everything, and allowing time, like yourself, the space to actually digest the information that is being shared.
Yeah, I think that's taking, allowing yourself space to digest information, or giving other people space to digest information, is really, really important. And also to circle back to make sure that you're understanding in the same place also, you know, that you understood the emotions correctly or the context correctly, or if there was something missing or something that was misunderstood before diving too quick into the action piece or reaction.
Yes, that's actually a really good point. Like when something I do find myself doing from time to time is, even when I doubt, when I get a sense that maybe a message was of a certain tonality, which is a bit more negative, I tend to ask, you know, like maybe if the message happened in a group channel where there are more people, I go directly to the individual, like, hey, I sensed that there's frustration. Am I sensing well? Like, is there something I can help with? Sometimes it is the case, sometimes it's not. And when it comes to, again, allowing yourself the time, in some cases, you know, someone shares a big request that comes asynchronously, you already have your day stretched. And a small tip, but it really helps, is that instead of pushing yourself to try again adding this task to the day, because even answering a big request is a task within itself, right? So instead, just set the expectation. If there is no timeline, I just ask for one. By when would you need this ready? And then if I get a timeline which is tight, two things. There's either something which is less important on my current priorities, and that's it. You know, we can easily switch. Or if it's not the case, you know, I need to negotiate back. But the most important case is that we're back to, I've provided myself the space to just write this task to my to-dos and then be able to prioritize it later and mm-hmm. still get back to it.
So that's also like closing the gap of expectations, this, and that actually work is a negotiation process. And to even think that within the day, there will be these requests coming in. And maybe it's even good to kind of plan some negotiation space time in there, because it will happen instead of being surprised by it or frustrated by it.
Indeed, indeed.
Oh, gosh. So we're probably coming to the end of our podcast. So is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
There's one thing. I think, you know, going back to what I was mentioning, it, I found it really challenging to switch from the fix-it mindset. And when you're trying to go through that, where you're intentionally, you know, trying to switch a bit more to coaching and maybe help people start finding their own answers, there's an urge where at first it feels like it's really slow. It's much slower. You know, you have an answer, you can try, you can quickly throw it there. That's it. You don't need weeks to follow up on. The takeaway here is that we have to remember that we're in it for the marathon, not the sprint. So it's true. You might have provided an answer in a day instead of a week or two, but fast forward 6 months, you're still doing that. So people are less empowered, less trusting their own judgments, and we take a couple of days off. So there's much less decision making happening. Whereas that investment over time, it accrues to a much quicker decision making, much more empowered people growing into leads, be it technical leads, be it people leads. And it's a win also for their own personal growth, which is not the title per se. It's just the individual's growth.
Yeah, that's beautiful. To think of the marathon versus the sprint. and that's also not only for the individuals, but also for the team. You know, giving the space and time for the team to learn how to work together, to gel together, to come up with, to, you know, negotiate together and to be able to function in a productive way for the organization.
Yeah. Indeed, indeed. So it's like the space for personal growth, that the teams should also have the space and they need to create it. And like the team leads or the trio should walk in the direction where there's regular reflection on how things are working within sprints. I also advise longer reflections on quarterly goals, for example, what worked, what didn't work so well. There's some things not working well. You know, even drafting their own agreements, working agreements, especially for teams that are starting to ramp up together.
Yeah. So there's lots of processes and protocols that really support that process of communication. Clint, thank you so much for being on this podcast, on this episode of the Listening Superpower podcast. It was really a pleasure to have you. I look forward to more conversations in the future.
Thank you. Thank you. And same here.
I'm your host, Raquel Ark, and you have just enjoyed your Listening Superpower podcast. This is an independent show, so please show your support by subscribing, leaving a 5-star review, and sharing with your friends. I love to hear from my listeners, what you love, what questions you have, any great guests that you have for the podcast. Email me at listeningsuperpower@gmail.com or send a voicemail at +49 173-234-0722. Check out listeningalchemy.com if you want to help your team communicate more effectively together. We focus on evidence-based listening strategies, and we do it in a playful and experiential way so that your team can work better and feel better together. Thank you, Cecilia Mercado, for your amazing podcast production, Ivo Thiemann for your inspiring music, and Dorte Streicher for your impactful artwork. It's been fun, and see you on the next episode.